Hi everyone, good morning. Great to be here again. Microsoft are obviously not learning from our past mistakes, so they've invited me again. thanks guys. As Mike said, today we're going to talk about connections between cybercrime and cyber war. This is my usual disclaimer. This is the hacker me. This does not relate directly to my day job, although some parts do kind of correlate in terms of mainly in terms of intelligence and providing that kind of intelligence to my customers. This is our agenda. We're going to talk about cyber war, cyber crime, revisit some of the historical events that correspond to cyber war, and see how what kind of connections do we have there to criminal activities, or as I like to call it, connecting the dots, which is just an easy way to decipher something. And the quick talk about the future. So what makes me stand here in front of you guys? Well, obviously, it's not my smarts. I do have a bachelor's degree in computer science, but that's like besides. I'm a hacker. I like to break things, mostly, which means I'm not a good developer. I did try to meddle in development a little bit. I actually ran the development shop for a couple of U.S. companies here. I'm a researcher. I like, again, to look at things and challenge them and question them. That gets me into a lot of trouble, which seems to be the the line here for the speakers so far. And in some of my spare time, I do my reserve duty in the Israeli Air Force, doing cyber stuff. So, yeah, by the way, if you're allergic to the word cyber, I'm immune by now. it's going to appear a lot here. I don't like it either, but as Colonel Mike said, it's what everyone likes. If you have additions, modifications, please feel free. If you catch me in any kind of FUD, throw something at me. Just crumple the agenda page and throw it. I'm sure you can manage it from behind. I will stop my talk. I will listen to questions. I will listen to comments. Please do it. This is not like a very structured, and you can't get me out of my zone. So stop me in the middle. This entire talk is basically based on some research I did a couple of years ago. And the research was focused on cybercrime. I was investigating a criminal server that we managed to get our hands on and look at what makes it drive. Not just the technical stuff, not the exploits and the vulns and the Trojans and so on and so forth, but how does that work as a business? Who pays who? Who gets paid? How does money gets made? What are the distribution channels, marketing, sales, everything that makes a business move? And you can probably catch the Blue Hat talk from 2008. The bottom line is that this is organized very much like a normal business. This is one of the examples I gave a couple of years ago of a marketplace for buying traffic in the goal to infect it or use it in some shape or form. This is a stock exchange. It's a full-on stock exchange just for trading traffic. One of the reasons for the immense success of cybercrime back at the time was the fact that browsers were not really patched, and drive-by downloads and infected websites were one of the major contributors to botnets. This is a slide I showed a couple of years ago. By now, we are way off better. So I hope this is not like recorded forever, but good job, Microsoft, for making sure that IE is patched way better than it was back in the end of 2008. But part of that research didn't really fit into what I was trying to deliver. And instead of just saying, you know what, the data doesn't fit, let's just throw it away, like any good academic researcher does, I decided to take that data and try to figure out where it does fit. That data specifically was, again, some stuff we found on the criminal server. That's a satellite image found in the PowerPoint presentation on the criminal server that was stolen from some other server. It depicts two points on the map with their GPS coordinates named target 1 and target 2. And that's not really supposed to be on the internet. Alongside it was another slide depicting the timeline for a drill consisting of F-16s and lunch and trials of some sorts, ground-to-ground engagements, F-16s again, Apache helicopters. Again, stuff that's not supposed to be traded or be used as part of a cyber criminal operation. This is not something that the criminals can sell to, you know, other criminals or other entities. Again, another slide depicting the detonation points with the accuracy. Alongside of it, we found a lot of raw data with ballistic information, software, screenshots. This is the software that was probably targeted in this whole campaign that the criminals grabbed off. And this is an air scenery management something software, finally declassified. And we did manage to trace or lowjack this bulk of data and saw that it popped up in a very strange location. It was not, again, as I said, a traditional cybercrime operation. It actually appeared in a competing nation. So that kind of made me hungry. And I started looking into the connections between a criminal operation, as I thought it was supposed to work, and what is now being spun off as cyber warfare. So this is basically what I did. Quick question, what is this? I know it's morning, you haven't had coffee. It's a bullet hole. All right. This is what we're dealing with every single day. This is what most of the researchers, including MSRC and myself, are dealing with. This is the exploit, the vuln, the hit. This is what I was trying to do when I started researching this. It's taking a step back and figuring out, all right, this bullet hole, who shot it? Who caused it? What's the context? Is it crime? Is it war? What's the purpose? And in order to do that, I started looking at the different elements of crime and war and found out that they're not that different. The funding may be a little different, the sources may be a little different, but bottom line, you need the same kind of skills and tools and techniques and strategy to obtain your objectives. Maybe a little dirtier on the criminal side, maybe a little better funded on the warfare side, but the bottom line is that you need the exploits, the vulnerabilities, the skills to use them, the stealth to make them not pop up. So let's talk about cyber war. This is the Wikipedia definition of cyber war. It states cyber warfare is the use of computers and the internet in conducting warfare in cyberspace. Bullshit. We're gonna tear this apart in like 3 minutes because I don't think that this really relates to what we're dealing with in the real world. Some people actually say that there is no cyber war. Anyone knows who this guy is? Guesses? Again? No? Nothing?
It looks funny.
It looks, okay. It's a good start. Come on. Blue hat guys? Howard Schmidt. You knew that, right? You're just ashamed to raise your hands. I'm in the U.S. I mean, the Europeans know this. And they usually say there was no cyber war or it never happened, but they also exempt that, except for something. Estonia, Tadenrain, the stuff in India, maybe Adobe or Google. So there's always some kind of an exception because it doesn't fit their mold of, no, this is not cyber war. What I claim is that you just need to connect the dots. Again, you need to step back, look at the entire picture, connect the dots, and figure out what the hell's going on. This is not the only way to do cyber war, not just, you know, Kremlin versus the Pentagon. Neither is spy versus spy, super elite, ultra hacker stuff, stealthy, and so on and so forth. But In any case, civilians are always going to be at stake here. Just like any traditional war, when you drop a bomb, it makes a big boom. And some stuff may, you know, get hurt along the way. Same goes for cyber war. So remember that when thinking of what cyber war is. These are the nations that McAfee has depicted as the top five developing countries developing advanced cyber offensive capabilities. You have the usual suspects, the US, China, Russia, France, and a little state here in the middle, Israel. This is the only case, by the way, that size does not matter. Okay? Anywhere else, forget it. This is what I'm going to focus on. I dropped off France, sorry, but we're talking about war, and added Iran. Hope there's no French nationals here. And added Iran, if not for only the fact that I have more data on that. So everything I say here, as I stated before, and no FUD, this is stuff that I can actually back up and say, I've seen the data and analyzed it. So a quick overview of those five different states. The U.S., you probably know better than I do, and you've heard the colonel talk a few minutes before. It's fairly well documented what's going on here. There's a lot of training, a lot of recruiting around cyber capabilities, both in the Air Force as well as the Navy, the Army. The Cyber Command has been established to kind of join forces for all the different portions of the military. You've got the NSA, obviously, doing a lot of cyber stuff. You're going to hear Charlie Stock. He used to work for these guys as well. Other three-letter agencies. I just added this. Anyone know who this is? CAT? Just because of the cool logo. I mean, seriously. This is the FBI's Cyber Action Team. So they get a lot of action on cyber. Russia. Russia is very interesting. I'm going to leave most of the Russian stuff to my dear friend here, who I've met yesterday, Fyodor, that's going to talk to you about what's going on there. Again, just a few bullets. GRU is dealing mainly with like everything. The SVR is dealing with mostly what's outside of Russia. FSB, that used to be the KGB, deals with federal security. No one really listens to what these definitions are supposed to mean, so everyone does everything in the good old traditional Russian way. Again, cool logos, love the top one. I mean, it's like menacing. One of the best names for an organization in Russia that I found was the Center for Research of Military Strength of Foreign Countries. I mean, why beat around the bush? Just state exactly what you're doing. And last thing to remember, and we're going to come across that, are the Nashis. Again, I'm sure that Fyodor has more to add about that. Yeah, they're like Boy Scouts on steroids, very politically motivated and organized, and can be utilized, as we'll see, to some extent in that front. Next off, China. You're thinking, oh my God, China. Well, yeah, but it's fairly well documented. Just go do your homework, read the Northrop Grumman report on what's going on in the Chinese military in terms of developing information warfare capabilities. You'll come across the GSDs, the 4th Department GSD for electronic countermeasures, which is offense, and the 3rd Department GSD, SIGINT, defense, and yes, Dynarain. It happened, we got hit, get over it. Iran is a very, very interesting country to look at, hard to look at because much like China, it's very compartmentalized and not a lot of information coming out. One thing to remember, telecommunications infrastructure company, again, not beating around the bush, this is what we do, they own all the telecom, all the connectivity in Iran. If you look at the connectivity that they've been putting in terms of optic cables, fiber optic cables to connect to the internet, You can see what's been going on in the past 5 years. All right, huge boom. They basically directly report to the government and are controlled by the Iranian armed forces to filter, control, modify, monitor, whatever it is, all communications going in and out. So you thought that the Chinese firewall is bad? Guess again. Israel. This is going to be boring. You can Bing it. Okay. Sorry for not modifying the slides. the IDF has been developing cyber attack capabilities. And again, you can read all about it in terms of what these guys have been working on. We have C4Is just like any other military operation, which is the command, control, communication computers, and intelligence branches in every part of the military. And specifically the Air Force, which is where I kind of work or help. Staffing is mostly homegrown, as opposed to what you can see here. We saw the colonel who was kind of, you know, this was his gig, and he got drafted in or decided to help. Back in Israel, everyone goes to the military. There's no choice. So when you're 18, if they see that you're kind of googly-eyed and you have glasses and you're not really in shape, they figure, all right, maybe you know something about computers. So, yeah, when I was young and I had hair, I obviously didn't fit the mold, so I ended up in the Armored Corps. So everyone who's 18 gets recruited. If you have some affinity to technical stuff, you will get into intelligence. Or cyber or whatever it is, and most of the training is done while you're in the military. Same goes for government agencies, other government agencies. You must be asking, ooh, Mossad. All right, the Mossad has a website, all right? It's not such a big woo. Go to the website, Bing translate it or whatever it is, and focus on the job section, all right? Very easy, you'll figure out exactly what you're looking for and just do the math. Connect the dots, figure out what these guys have been dealing with. All right? Questions so far? We're good. All right. Attack. This is what I consider as a cyber warfare attack. All right? So this is where I bash the Wikipedia definition. Highly selective targeting of military and critical resources in conjunction with a kinetic attack. Or you can modify that to kinetic action. Just like any warfare, you're not just going to focus your forces, or you're not going to commit an action on one aspect of warfare. It always has to be synchronized, all right? From Sun Tzu to whatever charlatan that's going to talk about warfare, it has to be synchronized. It has to be strategic. Or, again, if you're talking cyber warfare, just DDoS the hell out of whatever you're targeting. This is mainly focused on propaganda and changing the public opinion or controlling public opinion in a certain area that you're conducting warfare at. Okay? So this is my definition of cyber warfare. Feel free, again, to bash it, trash it, heckle, whatever it is. Defense. I hate defense, so I don't have a lot to say about it. I'm you know, naturally, you know, a havoc wrecker, so I'm not good at defending stuff. But defense is never going to be just military. Targets will be civilian, so you have to think just like that when you're planning your defensive actions. This is why most of the cyber warfare capabilities, the defensive capabilities that are built, are connected to critical infrastructure and to civilian and private companies. Okay? They will get hit. They will get targeted. Availability, integrity of services is key here. And one thing to note about cyber warfare defense is that it is okay, tactically, to shut down something. Not really shut it down, but deny access for my customers just to keep the thing running. If I'm being DDoSed, I might want to just block off access to my legitimate customers just to keep the service running. Off to cybercrime. This is going to be very simple. If you don't see this in cybercrime, you're doing it wrong. That's it. If you can't see the money, you're not looking at cybercrime. Okay? Excellent. It worked just like a business. We did the quick recap from 2008 in terms of the business structure and so on and so forth. again, very organized, and whenever you do research on cybercrime, you just follow the money. So it's fairly easy. In terms of attacks, the classics still apply here. Web, mail, open services, targeted attacks on prime targets, carpet bombing for just grabbing whatever I can get, secondary infections through established botnets and established infections are also key, again, to attain more customer base. This is what it looks like when a single server attacks. This is the server that I was analyzing a couple of years ago. It was a single cybercrime server. We mapped out over 120,000 websites that were infected and carried out code to attack the visitors for those websites. And when we tried to map them out using geolocation and their approximate geography, this is what we got. So again, it just makes sense. They're looking for money. You go where the people have money. Western Europe, East and West Coast of the US, these are the websites that were targeted. These are the geographies that were targeted. Same goes for the groups running those campaigns. Okay? We talked about specialization in cybercrime, okay, the nice structure. You're not going to find a group that does money mulling or credit card fraud operating from the UK and and focusing on defrauding US cardholders. Why? Because it's not their expertise, right? They're going to focus on defrauding UK customers because it's a completely different financial system, right? They have the little chips on the credit cards. The methodology may be different. The banking system is different. Therefore, the groups that are operating in the criminal operations are going to be located approximately around where their targets are. Tools. We talked about, or Colonel Mike talked about tools and techniques. Tools are easy to get. This is Zeus, one of my favorites. It's a botnet tool, basically. My mom can configure it. Seriously, my mom can configure it. I sat down with my mom and taught her how to use this to build a botnet. And she could do it. You don't need to be an Uber hacker to run a botnet. Point, click, configure, tell it what to do. This is the bank I want to defraud. This is the information that I like to get. I want to look for Word documents on the local subnet. I want to look for HP printers on the network. I want to look for whatever it is. Very, very easy to conduct. Okay? And yes, this can be used as an APT. Variants of Zeus have been found in highly targeted attacks focused on specific corporations, focused on specific individuals. This is the other side of Zeus. Obviously, when you deploy, when you click on the build loader, on the Zeus builder, you get a new binary, you ship it out somehow, it gets installed, and that's it, it's running. By the way, every time you click build loader, you get a different binary that, with a detection rate that is usually below 30%. This is, as I said, the management side. Again, it comes with an installation wizard. It configures the database and everything it needs to run. It provides, again, a point-and-click interface. You can create different users here with different permissions to manage the different botnets that you're running. You can drill down to get more information on a specific bot up to the level of looking at specific credentials, the data, issue commands, and so on and so forth. Again, don't need to be an Uber hacker to run a botnet. Defenses. Bloody defenses. All right, so we have all of these, anti-virus, malware, spyware, rootkit, Trojan, whatever, but yeah, seriously, doesn't really work. This is from a Zeus builder that I just did a couple of months ago, and I got zero detection, all right? And this is before packing it and kind of obfuscating it. Just click, 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 generate five, send them, one of them will end up with zero detection. You must be saying, Ian, you're wrong. What about our firewalls and IDSs and IPSs and the stuff that's looking at all the network? They must detect this. Seriously? Where's Dan? everything can run over DNS. Most of the communications run over HTTP 480 or 443. Talking about 443, everything is encrypted. All right? Your IDS and IPS is blind as a bat out of hell. Okay? So everything runs basically as it wants. So how does do these two connect? Whatever we talked about in terms of crime and war. My claim is cybercrime is being used to conduct cyber war. Okay, more specifically, countries that are developing cyber warfare capabilities will not hesitate to use criminal operations to carry out their dirty work. So let's look at some history. You cannot talk about cyber warfare without mentioning Estonia. So I mentioned Estonia. And we're kind of short on time. So Israel. Again, let's just get it out of the way before everyone starts panicking. Everyone heard of Operation Orchard? Yeah. Fantastic. Finally. You beat the execs, by the way, from yesterday. No one knew what Operation Orchard was. Operation Orchard, this is a Syrian nuclear factory. Okay? You can see here the before and after pictures. This is very interesting because the after picture is after they actually bulldozed that area. This is how it looked like right after the bombing. And this happened September 6, 2007. September 6 is my birthday, so it's easy to remember. Kind of a nice birthday present. And this was very awkward. Anyone can guess why this was very awkward? Politically, internationally? It was, okay, never admitted. Why? All right. There was a slight problem with this whole thing, all right? When a nuclear plant goes boom and disappears or crumples, usually there's an associated kind of kinetic something that dropped that bomb that makes boom, all right? Now, if you know your geography, Israel, Syria, there's Lebanon kind of in the middle, and there's Turkey. And that nuclear plant was way up in Syria. Neither the Turkish or the Lebanese or the Syrian radar systems picked up anything that might have gone and made that boom. Okay? No aircrafts were spotted across three different countries. And you can't, and again, you have people here that know this better than I do, you can't just send like airplanes up in the sky and jam the hell out of everything. It's just impossible. You need a lot of aircraft and it's not feasible. So this was one of the prime examples, I think, of a cyber action, going back to CAT, in perfect synergy with a kinetic action, right? This is kinetic, obviously. And cyber meant no one sees anything. This is why, by the way, the Syrians bulldozed that area and said, oh, there's nothing here. Because it's just too awkward to admit that they, you know, something blew up there without anything that might have caused that thing to blow up showing up on anyone's radars, literally. Georgia. Georgia is my pet peeves. It's my pet peeves because it's one of the first examples that we're seeing a kinetic action and a cyber action fully synchronized where the cyber attacks came from civilian networks and attacked mostly civilian networks. I'm going to blow through this really quick because Fyodor knows way more than I do about this and he can cover a lot of this. Remember those names, okay? You must identify at least one of them, all right? Mikolo, I think, broke some news last year here when it was shut down and spam volume dropped by like 70% in 2 minutes. These are all basically criminal operations that allow criminals to run their networks and services basically unaffected. It's a very complex relationship between the those entities, their criminal connections and their government connections. But as I said, we're going to skip that and get back to Georgia to see exactly what happened there. This is what we detected coming out of the CNC servers. Flood HTTP, TCP, ICMP, the Georgian's president's website. Just shut it down. And then the troops crossed over. And then six new command control servers came up and started again, attacking Georgian websites, government websites, and mainly media websites. Remember what I said about cyber warfare? DDoSing, blanking out, propaganda, mind control, public opinion control. This is exactly what was happening there. If you were a Georgian citizen back at the time, and you wanted to know what's going on, what the hell is Russia doing, you know, crossing the border, tanks, big booms again, you just couldn't, because most of the Georgian media was shut down. At the same time, coincidentally, those command control servers were also running their usual operations. Okay? Attacking porn sites, adult escort services, carders, web money, web gold, web whatever. Just, you know, business as usual. Same command control servers. Very synergetic to the kinetic attacks. Very targeted attacks on media and government websites, and on the same time doing their usual business. Just connect the dots. Okay? It's very easy. Iran. We're not running anywhere. Anyone does not remember the 2009 Twitter attack? Obviously, everyone remembers. By the way, if you look at the political kind of landscape of things, the timing was just right on. UN Council decisions banning Iran or imposing some restrictions on them, protests in the streets of Tehran by opposition leaders, and Twitter's down. December 19th, if I recall correctly, this is what Twitter looked like. Iranian cyber army, the site has been hacked by Iranian cyber army, blah, 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 blah. There's a Gmail address if you want to contact them and, I don't know, try to tweet. This is what Google's Twitter entry looked like. Again, the site was hacked by Iranian cyber army. The MO was very, very cybercrime oriented. Just steal the credentials to the DNS servers, to the DNS management system, sorry, change the DNS entry, bam, I got Twitter. So Twitter was taken down December 18th. If you try to look up the Iranian cyber army, you're not going to find anything before like June, July 2009. All right? You would have thought Iranian cyber army has been established and been operating for a long time. No. What you will find is a group called ASEAN. It's a classic kind of Shiite criminal group, cybercrime group, with political affiliations of some sort. And ASEAN was actually hosting a subgroup called, or started a subgroup called Iranian Cyber Army. These are the defacements that ASEAN has been using over some time when they were attacking political sites or just sites that they didn't want to exist. If you look at the HTML template, it's exactly the same as the one used by the Iranian Cyber Army when Twitter was attacked. Okay, they just changed the pictures. So, as I said, everything in ASEAN, you can log into the forums if you get Farsi, or have someone that gets Farsi. And in one section of the forums, you'll find something very interesting. You've got training. War games. War games is a little game that you play in the ASEAN group, especially if you're connected to the Iranian Cyber Army group, subgroup, sorry. In war games, you get a new target. Capture the flag, stuff like that. Kind of like it. You get a new target with a very specific set of rules describing what are you supposed to do. How do you score here? Okay? The main target is to gain access to the internal network, control stuff, steal information, blah, 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 all the way down to just deface the thing and go away, which is the least scoring action. Now, if you look at the target for that specific war game, the target changes every few weeks. ChesterGas.com is the natural gas authority for Chester County, South Carolina. This is target practice. Okay? Let it sink. This is target practice. What else happened on the 18th? Anyone remember? Something major besides Twitter. Nothing? No political army stuff going on? Something that may have shook the media? Iranian troops crossed the border to Iraq and seized a freaking oil well. All right? What was everyone concerned about? OMG, what the hell? Twitter's down. Yeah, great timing. The more recent Baidu attack, exact same MO. All right, Iranians obviously have a thing with China, exact same MO. Steal credentials for DNS, change the DNS. I got Baidu now, all right? I had Twitter, now I got Baidu. So let's look, kind of recap on how ASEAN works, okay? We've got the traditional DDoS, site defacement, botnet herding, you know, classic cybercrime operations, easy. And we have the Iranian Cyber Army, subgroup of ASEAN, which does strategic attacks, okay? Remember, war games, Chester Gas, all right? Targeted attacks, mainly on the US and, as we've seen, China. Can you really tell the difference? Cybercrime, cyber war? Yeah, the capabilities are there. It's just a question of who uses them and how. Just connect the dots. One of the comments I got for after submitting my talk here was, you know, you have a spelling error here, this slide doesn't look right, don't use a Mac, blah, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, can you talk about Stuxnet? So there you go, Stuxnet. All right. China. China, I'm going to blow through these slides because you've probably heard a lot about it. I'm just going to focus on the interesting parts. In China, the Great Chinese Firewall is kind of working fine. It is a proving ground for many cyber attackers. And when you look back at bulletproof hosting, again, RBN, when RBN was brought down in 2008, it wasn't really brought down. It just moved to China to host Resh until the whole media thing kind of subsided. Everyone got off Russia's back for allowing RBN to happen, and then it moved back up to good old Mother Russia. the obvious Chinese connection, Google got hacked, okay? A highly sophisticated targeted attack, blah, 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 blah. This is David Drummond from Google. And then Adobe came up and says, you know what? If Google managed to stand up and say, we got, then we can say too. A highly sophisticated coordinated attack got into our systems. MO was exactly the same in OODA in Internet Explorer to get into Google, Adobe, and more than 40 additional companies. I was fortunate enough to do some of the forensics, fun. When you look at the code, when you look at what's exactly going on, again, classic cybercrime, APT, ooh, very scary. So everything was pointing back to cybercrime as far as I was concerned. And then the US, right? Everyone was kind of blaming China from the corporate side. And then Hillary Clinton stands up and says, we look to the Chinese government for an explanation. Excellent. I look to God for guidance, but I got shit. But the ability to operate in cyberspace and confidence, blah, 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 is critical in our society. All right, great. What's the China move? Wasn't us. We'll look for you. Wasn't me. And what better proposition to say it wasn't me than have a professor from one of the universities in which the command and control servers were operating from talk about how the university network is being abused again and again and again and again by criminals to run their criminal operations, okay? So you have plausible deniability, or perfect deniability as far as I'm concerned, to say it wasn't me, with proof of networks that have been abused for a long time by criminals to run their operations that are linked directly to this attack, okay? Going back to the attacks, major US companies, this is kind of the flip side of things. If you don't think it's crime, it's very strategic. The bottom line is state and crime are really working together here. Okay? The state has a vested interest in this specific case to have criminal operations running from selected government networks. I don't know if you realize, in China, universities are basically government. I'm dealing with it right now, unfortunately, but that's just how it works. And if you have a professor admitting that the university network is being used for criminal operations, win. Okay, just connect the dots, HostFresh, capabilities, development, the code looks very much cybercrime, fairly easy. All right, a couple of words about the future. Oracle, what do you see? Oh, can I say Oracle here? Yeah. So this is the future of cybercrime, cyber warfare as far as I see. First things, botnets are king, right? What is this? OLPC, right? One laptop per child. What happens when you ship an unprotected laptop to a country that doesn't have the resources or the economy to buy a lot of software to protect it, and one of those gets infected? Yeah, you got a big-ass network of bots running in a third world, second world, whatever you want to call it, country, developing country. What are the weapons of mass destruction of the future? Let me break it to you. There is no internet kill switch. Okay? There is no Stuxnet that's going to demolish the internet. What is the weapon of mass destruction for in cyber warfare is still connectivity. Remember when I said size doesn't matter just in the case of Israel? Well, size does matter here. The biggest pipe you have, the bigger pipe you have, the more of a man you are on the internet. Okay? So the more effect you have, this is going to get censored so badly. Connectivity is still king, all right? That's the bottom line. Forget the pipe. And what better connectivity do you have other than clouds? You can't really see them because they're not really there yet. The wind's just blowing them away. But we are seeing already criminals using the cloud as a base of operation to conduct their cyber crime thingies. Quick summary. We've seen good things, especially when we're looking at the U.S. And Israel and France and other European countries developing formal training on cybersecurity. Okay? We're seeing a lot of recruiting, a lot of formalization of the knowledge and knowledge transfer. On the other hand, the criminals are still doing it better because this is what gets them paid. Okay? Commercial development of malware is still very, very much keen. It's effective. It just works, right? If you look at most of the attacks, the cybercrime attacks in the past year or so, you're not going to see a lot of ODAs being dropped there. Why? Because it just works, okay? We have a social problem. We have a people problem, as always. It's not a technical thing. What happens when you mix good and bad? Hello? It's a Microsoft mouse, so you get the ugly. Money changes hands, less tracks to cover, criminal ops are already creating the weapons, so why am I, as a nation developing cyber warfare capabilities, should invest in training and recruiting and teaching and training again and testing where I can get all of that stuff off the shelf? Okay, this is exactly what we've been seeing. So how does that get solved? Two elements here, all right? Again, crime and war. On the criminal side, it's actually looking pretty good. Nations or countries are starting to understand that on the internet, there are no borders. Big surprise. There is no jurisdiction. And you're seeing a lot of law enforcement cooperation between countries that you've never imagined would talk to each other, ever. I've seen this 2 years ago. I've seen this last year. I just got an email to invited me to some consortium forum, something in Tallinn, in Estonia. And the list of attendees is just mind-blowing. So on the criminal side, people are cooperating to start fixing this. Once this gets done and the connections are being made, only then we can move on to the warfare side. NATO, I think a week or a week and a half ago, has stated that it wants to initiate a new legislation, a new whatever NATO paper, for lack of better terms, that is going to define what is an act of war on the internet. That's a first. Okay? It's a good step. If we'll take whatever's been done, if we'll take whatever's been done on the, I don't want to set the magnification level. If we'll take what's been done on the nuclear side of things, all those treaties and pacts between nations to kind of control nuclear weapons, and we use those connections and we use that trust alongside the established connections on the crime, on the law enforcement side, maybe we can start defining rules of engagement for cyber war. What's permitted, what's not permitted? Is Stuxnet a dirty bomb? I don't know. Right now, it's just, you know, no one told us we can't use this, so it's out there. I think that the key point here to remember is that, and that's something I try to relay on the what is cyber war slide, it's never a technical thing. Okay? There's always going to be humans involved. Stuxnet did not get into a separated network when someone browsed some porn site. Okay? Someone had to plug in this USB key to some, again, segregated network and get it there. Most of the attacks that I'm seeing, that I'm conducting as part of the consulting stuff, end up with a social engineering element to it. This is why phishing is so effective. So whenever you're thinking about defenses, which is unfortunately what most of you think about, always think about the human element as well. Guys, that's all I have for you. If you have any questions, please feel free.